Shavuot Mevarach, Mishnah continues for Tesvav Cheshvan, 30 October. And we are in the second chapter of Yevamot, Mishnah Tet, Mishnah 9. Yesterday we started into some cases where something was a little bit suspicious and then people got married and if that marriage should continue or it's too suspicious. So Mishnah Tes picks up on this theme, Hamevi Get, Mimidat Hayam. A messenger brings a get, a document of divorce, from overseas. He's bringing it from, say, France to Eretz Yisrael to give to the wife in question named on the get. The Amr, and he says, he testifies, Bifanai Nichtav, Bifanai Nichtam. This get, this divorce document, was written in front of me and signed in front of me. Now, when we get to Masechet Gittin, everything about divorce and the get document itself, we will explain this is a really important thing to say. Because if the messenger that shows up holding the get, we don't know if this get was written what's called lishma, for the purpose of the specific man and woman, and a get must be written for this specific couple. If someone just finds a get in the garbage, and it happens to have his name and his wife's name, he can't use that to effect a divorce. It's invalid. And the other issue is, if someone's coming from France or Canada to Israel, well, the witnesses who signed, they're way over there in Canada. So then if the husband shows up in Israel and contests the get, says, hey, that's falsified, that's fake, you know, the witnesses aren't there to validate and corroborate the fact that it was a valid get. So our sages enacted that when the messenger was there and saw the writing and the signing of this get by valid witnesses, and he testifies to that effect, that makes the get valid and makes the get challenge-proof later on. So if he's the one man that this divorce depends on, the Mishnah says, lo yisa et ishto. He cannot then marry this woman. It would look very suspicious for the messenger bringing the get and basically validating the get through his individual testimony to then marry the woman who got divorced through it. Now the next case, met. One man shows up and says, sorry, your husband died. Or he says, harag tiv, I killed him. Nebuch. Or Hargnuhu, I was in a group, and the group killed him. You know, they're robbing him, and Nebuch, it went bad. Lo yisa et ishto. He also cannot marry such a woman. I really don't think the widow would want to marry the one who shows up claiming to have murdered her husband, but she can't. We don't let them get married. And again, when the ability of this woman to marry depends only on one person, we have a concern that maybe a person, fell madly in love with this married woman, and the husband went overseas on a business trip, and he's making up a story to try to get with this woman. Rabbi Yehuda adds a chiluk here, a detail. If he says haragtiv, he says I killed him. Lo tinose ishto. He cannot marry this woman. He's basically making himself into a rasha, an evil doer, by testifying like this. Harag nuhu, I was in a group and the group killed him. Someone else killed him, really. Tinose ishto. He could, in theory, marry this woman. Now, Mishnah Yud continues this theme. Hechocham, the wise man. This refers to an expert in annulling vows. You could go to a court to annul vows. You could also go to an echad mumche, one sage who's very good at releasing people from their vows. And we're going to talk all about vows in Masechet Nedarim. It comes up in Ketuvot also, but we're going to go into vows in great detail later on in Nashim. So, a chacham she'asar et isha b'neder, o baila, a sage who forbade a woman on her husband with a vow against her husband. Now, really what happened was the wife took a vow against the husband first and basically made a vow, a binding religious oath. She made a vow that the husband can have no benefit from her at all. Now, obviously, such a marriage, such hostility and animosity, and now there's a religious obligation. He can't have any benefit from her. This marriage can't continue. So he sends the wife to the sage, to the chacham, to annul this vow. And Lamaisa, she shows up in his office, and they have a discussion about the vow, and he can't find a valid reason to release her from the vow. Hareze lo yisaina. This sage cannot then marry this woman. People are going to say, looks very suspicious. It looks like he upheld her vow, didn't find a valid opening to release the vow because he wanted the first marriage to end so he could marry this particular woman. Now, the Mishnah goes on with similar cases where the marriage would be allowed. Me'ana, if somebody was on the court presiding over a miyun. Now, a miyun is a ceremony that we mentioned in the first chapter, if a young girl was married at a young age, not by her father. Her father was never out of the picture. And, you know, sometimes this happened in Yemen or other countries where the non-Jewish neighbors were not very civilized and would tend to abduct young girls who weren't married. They wouldn't abduct married girls because the husbands or family would come after them, but they tended to abduct, especially in Yemen, girls who were not yet married. So they might, you know, write up a marriage contract for a girl who was very young to protect her from the non-Jewish neighbors. And miyun was the right of refusal. When this young girl comes of age in this rabbinic marriage, she could actually refuse the marriage and go out and marry someone else. And it's as if that first rabbinic marriage never existed. But that requires a bezdin. That requires at least three men to be on the court. So someone who's on such a court, osha chaltza bifanav, or this woman did a chalitza in front of him. She did the chalitza ceremony we'll discuss in detail later on in Yevamot. Yisaena. He could then marry this woman, Mipnei Shahu Betin, because he wasn't acting on his own as an individual. He was acting as part of the court. So he couldn't release this woman from her marital situation by himself. He had to be part of the court. So he could then marry her. The Chulan, and in all of these cases, any of these cases, Shahayu Lehem Noshim, where the man that might be suspected of trying to release a woman from her marriage already had a wife, Umeitu, and then his pre-existing wife passed away, Mutarut linose lahem. He could then marry this woman. So in that first, in the case we mentioned about the chacham, the sage who could not release a woman from her vow against her husband, so then the marriage had to end, but that sage was already married, and then his first wife died, then yeah, we could let him marry this woman whose vow he could not undo, because we don't say people are planning ahead that far. That's not on people's suspicion radar. V'chulan shenisu la'cherim. And in all of these cases, if the woman, the wife who was released, married somebody else, v'nit garshu, v'nit almanu, and then was divorced from that other man or became a widow from that other man, mutarut linase lahen. So the sage or the messenger, the bearer of the bad news that the husband had passed away, they could then later marry that woman, because we don't suspect that this, that they made some sort of conspiracy where, you know, she wanted to get out of the marriage and he said, okay, I'll testify falsely and then she's going to go marry another guy for 5 years. Like, that doesn't happen. People aren't that suspicious. Finally, the Mishnah adds, similarly, v'chulon, in all of these cases, mutarot livnehem o le'achehem. The woman in question who was released could marry the son or the brother of the man who released them. We don't suspect men of making up testimony or lying or failing to absolve oaths for the benefit of a son or a brother. You know, maybe for their own self-interest, that's suspicious, but not for someone else. Yashar kochachem and zay gezunt, besorah tovot leklal Yisrael.